panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy, aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au. Let's go!
Don't start me talking, or I'll tell everything I know. Don't start me talking, I'll spill the beans for sure. Right before your eyes, I'll blow it all open wide. Don't start me talking. Scratch. First a little slow, then I start to flow. Don't start me talking. Cheers, all you cheers. Help me if I fall. Cheers, all you cheers. God bless you. Don't start me talking, I'll have it all my way. Don't start me talking, 'cause night will turn to day. Stars will run high, strong men weep or die. So don't start me talking. Cheers, only cheers. Help me find a way.
CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3CR.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally, first broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon. Thanks for your company. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Kulin Nations at the intersection of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong peoples, and we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello to any Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander, First Nations people tuning in, and we acknowledge that all the lands were stolen and never ceded. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm Sally Goldner. I use the pronouns she and her, and I'm your host for this hour of radio, which covers knowing no boundaries of sex, gender, musical genre, and guest today, because in the second half hour of the show, Paula Gerber will be with me this week after some personal circumstances that happened to a friend last week. So all sorted there. And I'll introduce my guest who's sitting here in the studio with me in a second. There's lots of ways to get in touch with the show, but one less than usual. So you can do outofthepan855@gmail.com, but unfortunately I can't do the SMS line this week because I'm in my best comedy voice, which is what the name of the album, the track Don't Start Me Talking came from, and we're going to be talking a lot. My best comedy voice from the two Ronnies, I left me dongle at home, so you can't do the SMS line. Sorry, roving, I'll have to get, if you're out there, or John, in particular, two of our regular SMS contributors, I'll have to get you to use another means of communication today. Silly Sally. But the other means are running at Sal Gold Said So is the place to be so, and that's the bottom line for Mastodon, Twitter, Blue Sky, and Instagram, and Facebook, Sally Goldner AM. And Out of the Pan, 3CR 855 AM Melbourne, postal address PO Box 1277 Collingwood 3066. Any opinions I express on this program are strictly my own. There might be content notes more in the second half today, so I'll give them now just so you've got them at least once. 1-800-184-527 for QLife, which includes Switchboard in Victoria and Tasmania, Rainbow Door 1-800-729-367. And yep, opened up with Comedy, was the name of the album, Paul Kelly, the artist, and Don't Start Me Talking, because I am now talking to a fabulous guest in the studio who very proactively contacted me and said, I've got a show in Fringe and I'd love to chat to you about it. And I thought, that sounds like a good thing. Welcome to the 3CR Studios, Marnie Mills.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It is very awesome to have you, and if it's okay to ask, I'll just check in with which pronouns you use, if any.
Thank you. I am also a she, her.
Another she, her. She, her's rule and all that sort of thing. And you're doing a comedy show, which is always a brave... Well, is it a brave thing to do? Is it a silly thing to do? Seriously, as much as we can be serious about comedy, what made you want to do a stand-up comedy show, and in particular, your debut solo Fringe show?
Would I call it brave or just biting off more than I can chew? I don't know. For context, I only started doing stand-up January 3rd this year.
Wow.
So I've done a lot of writing.
Goodness me. January 3rd and you're already within your first year. You're in there. That's pretty awesome. A lot of writing. It's been tumbling out, has it?
It has. I actually only got into stand-up because last year someone gave me a 10-minute guest spot because they didn't have anyone for the week. I did 10 minutes, and afterwards I did 10 minutes on a lot of my early gender transition experiences, really specific stuff. And I got asked at the end of the show by a few people when my show was going to be.
There's so many things that's already come out of that. But I've got to ask, how much warning were you given to do this 10-minute stand-up spot?
About a week.
Wow. And you pulled a 10-minute... tight 10, so tight to speak, 10. Out in a week, having no warning, never probably possibly even thought about doing stand-up, and rocked it, and then people are saying, when are you doing a show? That deserves woohoos and bye fives or something.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, we'll take a bye five. Well, thank you. I had, at the time, I was an improv performer. Oh, I was an improv performer. It's still in theory, am an improv performer. questionable how good I am with improv. I was very much a fringe performer, not as in a Melbourne fringe performer, as in I was like very much a fringe cast member.
Okay.
At the time. And I had dabbled in a little bit of writing, say, the month prior. I hadn't performed anything, but I had a few notes. So my producer at the time knew that I had a few notes scribbled down, and they kind of said, Marnie, do you want to do 10 minutes? Because we don't have anyone this week.
And you went for it. And you know, you got that sort of response that people are saying, when are you doing your first show? That's, I just think yes to that. I mean, that's, yeah, I don't know whether that's brave insanity or it's just truly heartfelt and autonomous. And, you know, coming to the material, though, you said you talked about your transition, which, you know, look, it can be an intense time at the point, a point of realization is another way to call it. You know, if we've sort of perhaps had an awareness of something in the, you know, all our lives, no matter when we get to that realization, whether it's 7, 27, 47, 67 years old, etc. And all of a sudden, there it is. We've got to go for it. And so what sort of things came out? And, you know, perhaps give us a teaser, not a spoiler, as they say.
A teaser?
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, sort of how did you turn it into comedy?
So that first, incidentally, that first 10 minutes I did is, with a lot of polishing, roughly the first 10 minutes of Hot Girl Summer.
Mm-hmm.
It does go over what I kind of considered that point of no return. I was 42 years old. A whole series of events kind of unraveled. I got invited to do Quit with Pride. So it was a campaign for quitting smoking.
Uh-huh.
Which came really late because it was 18 years after I'd quit. And if I had known that it had taken so long, I would have smoked longer. But they asked me to do Quit with Pride because I was an openly queer person, but not an openly trans person at the time. And for some reason, I don't understand it, my body, given the modeling shoot that I had, my body decided to tick the female option on the shoot, where they had a non-binary option, and I want to point out, they had a non-binary makeup artist and hair department.
Oh, awesomeness.
I still ticked the female box, and then I realized, if I tick this box and go through with a shoot, there is absolutely no going back from here.
Yep. And there it was. Wow. What an amazing journey. I mean, there's got to be, I mean, yeah, there's emotion in that, and that's got to become comedy, which is, you know, sort of then led to your show, which is called, now you've called it Hot Girl Summer, but yes. You need to look for HRT Girl Summer if you're searching for it on the melbournefringe.com.au site, which I love the title, and when sharing that, we jointly promote Out of the Pan with the next show on Freedom of Species. They love that title too, so you've already got us in there. And it's a great title, cheeky, vulnerable, and witty, per the Fringe website. But what, you know, sort of then you've got to extend it out to around 50 minutes or so, yes. At least. How did it go from there?
Well, it did go, which is where eventually the whole title came from, because it genuinely is. It's Hot, spelled HRT. It went through my following HRT and kind of tumultuous life journey from that point on. Because it all happened so quickly, I didn't really think about how many new things I would instantly discover, how much about my life would completely fall apart, how much I would have to just work out just how to live again. I did say in the show, I pretty much re-entered the world with a dream and enough estrogen to open a fernwood.
There we go. There's a teaser / spoiler, people of all, listeners of all genders. I like it. You know, I'm going to ask this question seriously, person to person, not with stand-up. I mean, what is one, you know, perhaps give us an example of one of the things that fell apart and one of the things that you, I'll say, built / started building / rebuilt.
So I had a lot of life realizations. I lost my quite stable 9-year relationship instantly, along with most of my friends.
Yep.
And I did not anticipate people just not talking to me. There's a lot of complications to that because it wasn't strictly transphobia. There's a lot more, as you know, there's a lot more nuance to it when you go through changes as a person. And I was quite rapidly, as a couple of friends in entertainment told me, suddenly a far more vicarious, far more expressive, far more honest person. Or, you know, not quite overnight, but close to.
Okay, then. Go further on vicarious, what that means to you and how that came about. And an example of that as well, yeah.
I've always been a happy person. I'm a happy-natured person.
Yeah.
But previously, you know, in my previous life, it would always be behind a wall. It would be very timid. I'd be happy but very timid about expressing it. Where I think now I am extremely open and jovial and very happy to get other people involved. It's all kind of a big party right now.
Okay, cool. Which is a great thing. You know, I mean, by doing comedy and getting your audience in a sense involved, not, you know, please give me your watch and I'll saw you in half sort of performance. But, you know, the audience is there laughing, you know, feeling things with you. That's, yeah, I'm with you now in terms of vicarious, and that's amazing. But yeah, it's sad that we lose people, whether it's the outright, you're trendy, I don't want to know you, or it's a bit too hard, or I don't understand, or whatever. And we do hear, I think, there was beginning to be a lot of anecdotal evidence a few years ago, and it's unfortunately, I'm never sure if it's been actually researched, that trans women in what I call the middle bracket, the roughly 30 to 60, do tend to lose a lot of cis male friends, or perhaps there's I'm not wanting to make too many generalizations there, but that was the gist of that evidence, which is sad, that can happen, you know. And yes, if they feel threatened, you know, I suppose you can say people have a right to their feelings, it's how they act on them. And if they've acted that way, well, from what I'm seeing of you, having, you know, had you sitting here for 15 minutes before the show and 15 minutes now, it's their damn loss. But,
thank you.
Yeah. Because just amazing. Yeah. And, so writing a stand-up comedy show, putting it all together, what's your writing process? I mean, do you do the half an hour a day? Do you have lots of coffee? See both of the above seriously? Well, how do you go about it? Because it can always vary for people, and it's always good to hear about different processes.
I've been asked this a lot lately. I have either an iPad or my phone pretty much next to the shower. The way I write shows, because I write, everything I do is extremely narrative, but it's also very one-liner driven. It's kind of a whole lot of one-liners that group into a story. And I have a private notes either scribbled into my notebook or, you know, on my digital notes apps of just pages and pages of relevant one-liners to my life that have come to me. There is just a mountain of things that I think, this could work in a situation. So I just have pages and pages of scribbled notes. And then it's an ordeal. I have days where my job is just, I'm going to sort these notes into groups and hope that there is some semblance of a connection between them.
Oh, wow. Now I've got 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've just got to use that famous word, segue. Yeah. That's awesome that there is so much. And I suppose it is all tumbling out. I mean, the thing that can happen for trans, gender diverse, non-binary, similar people, and to some extent lesbian, gay, bi, is that after the initial layer of fog lifts, there's clarity and all this stuff is coming up to think about, process, deal with. So I imagine there could have been a lot after 42 years, yeah.
It kind of was the dam bursting and all of these, because it was also, and I don't know, the whole spectrum of it. But when I talk to people, there is a spectrum of experiences from people who knew right through to people like myself, who I describe as I knew but I didn't know. Because I never had, like, I never had gender dysphoria, but also I have excessively high pain tolerance. So I think I'm just good at blocking it out.
Ah, okay.
But I have gender euphoria, so I know when things are right. But also, I once passed out in an elevator from pain, which ended up being nerve damage, and I got rushed to St. Vincent's Hospital. So don't trust me when I say things are okay.
Okay. Wow, that's a bit scary. That's intense, to put it mildly. That's huge pain tolerance. Have you considered doing, here we are, this is my in-joke at 21 minutes past 12, have you considered doing deathmatch wrestling? that's the wrestling reference. We've got it out at 21 minutes past today. That's the running gag for those taking bets on this. Gamble responsibly, there it was. Seriously, the fact that you can laugh at that, there's probably some material in that somewhere, I would guess.
I think a lot of laughter, for my audiences, a lot of laughter does come from quite painful moments, but it's not just brutality in those moments. It's especially with gender transition, there's a lot of absurdity at the same time as the pain.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, things are rarely all or nothing, as we know in the trans world. We're not into binaries, and so there is, sort of light and shade and laughter and happy tears, sad tears, all that sort of thing. And that's fair enough, which you obviously with the show you've got, I think, is going to go through with that. There's one thing that I want to ask. I'm just going to ask because it's random and it's sitting in my head. Do you do stand-up comedy all the time, or do you have these things to do called paying bills, sadly, in a industrialized society? What do you do to pay bills as well as doing stand-up?
Oh, that is such an interesting question, because although I do a lot of shows at the moment, it's not enough to cover all of my bills.
Nope.
So I work, I won't name anything
sure
particularly specific, but I do work in finance as well. I actually work in quite a conservative part of town. And here's the weird thing. I'm out as gay where I work, but I'm not out as trans.
Okay. That's a perfectly reasonable thing, because we know that very broadly speaking, LGB has progressed further in rights, sadly, than T, even in a relatively good place like Victoria. And I want to acknowledge a message from Roving Reporter in that way, one of our regular correspondents on the show. And that's fair enough. I think that in an ideal world, we'd either all be out, we'd just have our own choice. We wouldn't have to worry about choosing when and where we come out. We could just be able to, there wouldn't be any worry about it, is the thing. But we've all got to, in the reality of the world, we have to decide whether it's worth coming out, whether it's something we want to do, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So there it is. There's so much we could talk about. My mind is having a nice neurodivergent flood here. What else do you want to tell us about, the show that is Hot Girl Summer, a joyous story of gender discovery, celebration and hormone therapy? any other things that come to mind? I suppose I'll just give you the open slather question.
Oh, goodness. There's so much. It really does cover that first year, basically the year when I was 42 years old. It goes from that opening realization right through to the point of getting myself back on my feet.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, it's actually quite an emotional story now to come back to. Because as you probably worked out, that was a little while ago now. I'm working as a as a woman in finance, where as one of the only females in the office too, I answered the door and there are so many clients who I'm sure assume I'm the secretary.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, I had that a lot too. I'm largely an ex-accountant. The good version practice worked, but I would get that, you know, the classic story one day. It wasn't so much anyone in the office, but someone who came in, some sort of contractor. I was there doing my finance job, and this cis male just walks by and says, "White with two sugars, thanks," or something. Now, thankfully, this was on an office that at the time was on Lygon Street, and I just said, "Oh, number 62 downstairs got the best coffee," and the guy looked at me as if to say, "Huh, what?" So misogynism, well... We were talking about swear words off here. I'll just say you can go fire truck yourselves, misogynists.
Oh, God, yes.
But it happens. And, yeah, particularly accounting, you know, I also had a trans friend who was in the accounting profession in, I better not say any more detail, but, you know, the masculinity of it, if not outright toxic masculinity, was still huge. And this was only within the last 10 years. So it can still be both male and masculine dominated, for sure, as sadly so much of life is. But, you know, and there is material in that. And actually, one 30th of June, when I was working as an accountant, I just was getting very frustrated. I took time to have a huge vent on Facebook about accounting, and a stand-up comedian said to me, "You have got so much material in there for a show." So, I'll get my money penny suit out and we'll do a duo show together.
Oh, just work stories.
Work stories. Accounting work stories. We could go on for hours. I wish we could go on for hours, but it's a pack, in those immortal words of those two comedians, it is a packed program today, so I've got to wind us up and get our next guest on the line. So tell us when, where, how, what, who we have to do to see this show, which I'm going to see if I can... Wangle my way along at some point. Hot Girl Summer.
Absolutely. I would love to have you there. Firstly, my Instagram is Ms. Marnie Mills. It's ms.marnie with an IE .mills. I have tickets available in the bio. I try to keep that always up to date. I have my first show / kind of party on this coming Saturday at Pride of Our Footscray. That's 6:30 p.m. Pride of Our Footscray. I've got a couple of gender diverse special guests as well.
Excellent.
Performing. It'll be just a wonderful night. I'm on at Melbourne Fringe at a venue on Smith Street, just in sort of the middle area of Smith Street, Wheat, Wine and Whiskey, October 7 to October 12. These are 8:30 p.m. shows. They give me the late slot. So Wheat, Wine and Whiskey approached me to do a show there.
Yep.
So that was extremely special. I'm very used to pitching to venues and pitching to showrunners to perform.
Yep.
They were amazing. They had seen me perform and they wanted me to do a show there. And they're incredibly, incredibly supportive of the gender diverse community in kind of action as much as word.
Excellent. Yeah, no, that's good. That's good to know, because we need, some, sort of smallish venues, queer north side, to support us. It's been a bit of a loss for a few years now since we lost the Hair Hole a few years ago. I've still mourning and grieving and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, there it is, just up on Smith Street, near Otter Street, that sort of thing. Not far from 3CR headquarters. So
not far at all.
There we go. Marnie, an absolute delight. Stay in touch with us if you've got anything and do more shows. I mean, Midsummer, is that, have you thought about that one yet?
That's definitely an option. I want to start looking at Midsummer, Melbourne Comedy Festival. I've been early touch with possibly Adelaide Fringe as well.
Cool.
But all of those are very, very, very early days.
Yep. All right. Marnie, a delight. Thank you. Have a wonderful afternoon in the sunshine, which is looking delightful out there. As one of our correspondents has said, I'll let you go. In the meantime, here's someone who always has a wry or dry sense of humour with his music, Joe Walsh. This is him solo, not with the Eagles, and a track about a skiing trip that went wrong. I broke my leg. 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally.
Foolish people are everywhere, but they don't bother me. No, your own mind. So be kind to yourself and have some care for fools and dickheads everywhere.
Thanks Go Kindly for their sponsorship of this program. Go Kindly creates high quality, locally made bedding, donating 50% of profits to support women and gender diverse people experiencing housing stress. Check out gokindly.com.au and take their pillow quiz.
Hi there, it's busy homosexual and community darling Dean R. Curie, and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM. Keep radical radio alive. Community radio is everything, and I love it.
So do I. I'm Sally Goldner. I'm your host of Out of the Pan, which broadcasts noon till 1 on Sundays, 3CR 855 AM, 3CR digital, 3cr.org.au, 3CR on demand. And we just heard from Totally Gorgeous and their track Strangers and Foreigners from the album, well, way back now, early 2000s. But you check out Totally Gorgeous' website to find out when it was. Maybe get a copy. You could also check out Mal Webb's website, which is appropriate enough. Just quickly acknowledging a message in from Roving Reporter. Thank you for emailing in. I'm sure that dongle is sitting on my bed. And a really important one, which I think is actually relevant to lead into our next guest, Paula Gerber, who I'll have on the airwaves in a second. Roving has said, beautiful day. And oh, yes, it is a balmy 21 degrees outside at the moment. And on the serious note, Roving says, quote, I want to say that I'm very grateful to live in a country with strict gun laws. Let's not take our privileged status for granted. Yes, absolutely. So, America, indeed, during the week. And, well, there's so much I could say about that and ridiculous rampant speculation. And as it turns out, Charlie Kirk's content note, huge note, murder, all sorts of things, despite, and including transphobia, despite early allegations that there was some trans linkage to this because of three letters on a shell casing or something, turns out that the shell casing was made somewhere overseas, and it's a really, really far-right person who shot Charlie Kirk because he wasn't conservative right-wing enough because he was trying to engage on issues. Oh, really? Yep, seriously, an awful thing. But yeah, I'm with you, Roving. Let's make sure our gun laws aren't watered down in any way, which there are some attempts that are going on to have that happen. We need safety at the moment, and we need to be kind to people, and we need busy homosexuals like Dean R. Curie, and we need busy lesbians like my guest on the line, who is a fabulous professor, and now not just authoring a paper, has authored a book. On the line is Paula Gerber. Paula, welcome to 3CR.
Thank you so much for having me, Shelley.
You have authored a book which sort of, you know, you still are sort of going, why did I do this or something? But tell us seriously, what's the book called? What made you do it? And tell us, and that'll be the first couple of things. Let's dive in there.
Okay, so the book's called Sex, Gender and Identity, Trans Rights in Australia, published by Monash University Publishing as part of their series In the National Interest. And this is where they publish quite small, accessible books on topics that are of interest to the broader public. So they've done, in the series, books on a housing crisis, on gender-based violence, on human rights, and they asked me to do this one on trans rights. And I jumped at the chance because, as a lesbian, I have seen great advances in the laws protecting my rights, like marriage equality, and in societal attitudes towards me. But what I have noticed is that there are parts of the LGBTIQA plus community that have not enjoyed those same advances. And particularly, I've noticed that trans people, gender diverse, non-binary people are very much still in the firing line. And I wanted to do my bit to try and educate the broader community about trans people and their rights and why they are not the villains that some are making out in mainstream media that they are.
Absolutely needed. I mean, in one sense, you could say sad that it is needed. I'm sure I'm getting some mic feedback here. Sad that it is needed. The thing is, what sort of topics are covered that we, you know, you're trying to rebut, and perhaps what ones aren't and why? Could be another question, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things that really concerns me is the misuse of language and terminology in the mainstream media. I did an interview with a newspaper about a couple that were choosing the sex of their baby. And the headline that came out the next day was, "Couple chooses baby's gender." Mm-hmm. It's like, I told the reporter, this is about choosing the sex, not the gender of the child, if you're doing sex selection over in the US, and that's another whole debate we can have. Mm-hmm. But I certainly want to clear up misunderstandings about language. I also was very concerned about what's going on in other countries. And there is a lot of fear in society in Australia at the moment, in the LGBTIQA plus community, that what's happening in the US or in the UK could happen here. And so I really wanted to sort of dig it down a bit into what's happening over there, why it's happening, and why I don't think that Australia's going to go down the same path.
I think that's one I'd like to explore in a bit more depth, because it is understandable the US and the UK, they're, in inverted commas, the big Western democracies, the big Australian allies, and people think, oh, we'll import that sort of stuff. What are the sort of things that you think we have in place that mean, oh, okay, there's at least, we'll say, in from your perspective, less probability that we'll make those sort of things happen here?
Yeah, well, let's start with the UK. They had the recent Four Women Scotland judgment from the highest court in the UK. It is, I think, a very flawed decision and fundamentally unsound. The court refused to hear submissions from anyone in the trans community. And we learn in first-year law school about the principles of natural justice and procedural fairness. And part of that is you hear from both parties. By refusing to hear from, you know, one side of the argument, I think it really discredits the whole decision. But even more so, that judgment is based on the 2010 UK Equality Act. Mm-hmm. It is very outdated legislation, and it is not replicated in Australia. Our equivalent, the Sex Discrimination Act, was modernised in 2013 to remove the binary language, to include gender identity as a protected attribute. So when the Australian courts go to interpret our legislation, as they're doing in cases like Tickle and Giggle, it's going to be a very different outcome, because it's very different legislation that's being interpreted.
Yeah, that's good thing to hear. There's two things I have about the UK. Now, the last thing I can claim to understand is the UK legal system, particularly where it might fit into European stuff, both post-Brexit, pre-Brexit, etc. So my two questions, which are probably linked, Is there grounds for an appeal on that fair process stuff to any, with any degree of possibility, whether it's 1% or 100%? And if so, what happens? So that's sort of two-part questions. And the second one is, where was biological sex defined under statutory law in the UK?
Okay, great questions. Let me start with the first one. It's certainly, I think there are grounds for appeal to the European Court because Britain may have exited the EU, but they still have the Human Rights Act, and that says that in all decisions, they must be made in compliance with the European Convention on Human Rights. And this decision, I think, clearly was not made in accordance with basic international human rights standards. So I think there are grounds to appeal. And, you know, I can't predict what the court will decide, but I could certainly think of some very sound arguments that could be made, not only on the basis of natural justice and procedural fairness and human rights, but also because I think that the court fundamentally interpreted the wrong term. So the Equality Act has the term sex in it. It doesn't have the term biological sex. And they said, oh, that means the same thing. And it's like, actually, no, it doesn't. And if my students had written assignments like that, they would have failed. I mean, it's, you know, statutory interpretation is you interpret the words in the Act, not any other words.
Yep, there we go. Well, yes, I'm going to be very sarcastic / dry humoured from my own point of view here. Gee, you're doing logic. Yeah, that's the thing. There just seems to be in all of this, the UK stuff, the US stuff, which, you know, I'm really reluctant to talk about it this week, you know, because it's been a difficult week for many trans people with some of the nonsense that came out after the shooting of a person who I don't really think I want to name. If I did name that person before, I won't name them again because they don't deserve it, in my opinion. You know, no one deserves to be shot, but, you know, we could go into a long thing about that. But, you know, the thing is, you know, there's a lot of emotion being whipped up. And, of course, once emotion gets whipped up, it can be more difficult to think. I am surprised that supposedly learned judges, you know, I'll be careful, could have left themselves open to that interpretation in the first place. But they're supposed to, aren't judges supposed to be above emotion or something?
Well, Sen Raj has done a lot of work on that, emotion in law and in judgments. And judges are human beings and they come to the bench with their biases and their prejudices and their emotions. And this bench was, I think, unfortunately constituted. It was predominantly white cisgender men. There was one woman on there. And, you know, you can't deny that, you know, a differently constituted bench might have come up with a different decision. But the other part of this that is concerning as well is that the one good thing in the judgment is they did go to pains to say, our job is just to interpret what woman means and what sex means in this 2010 Equality Act. Mm-hmm. The media have gone, you know, big headlines, oh, the UK finally understands what a woman is. And a lot of people are now taking this judgment much further than it should be taken and it can be taken. And what I really hope to achieve with this book is to help people understand the nuance that is involved in this area and not just to try and make everything black and white and right and wrong.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, nuance, which, of course, in a day and age of clickbait news cycles, emotiveness, those sorts of things, you know, people don't want that because it doesn't bring in ratings, points and clickbait for commercial media, for example. It's harder for politicians to do grab pieces with it. Again, there's my sarcasm coming through. The thing that I wanted to ask you was, you're a cisgender person. How did you make sure that you had the perspective of trans people in writing this, or are you just writing this as an ally? You know, how exactly did that work out? Because that's really, really important.
Yes, look, I confess I had a bit of imposter syndrome writing a book about trans rights being a cisgender person. And I decided that actually a couple of things that I got me past that and got me to writing this book. And one is that I'm actually speaking to other cisgender people. They're the main target audience and parts of the LGBTIQ community who are anti-trans as well. But predominantly the audience is cisgender people who I think there's so much misinformation and disinformation out there. And if I can get them to think about things a bit differently, then that's a really good start. And the other thing is that I made sure that I had trans voices in the book. So I sent the manuscript to, when it was still draft, before I sent it to the publisher, to multiple trans people that I knew and said, please read this, please give me honest feedback. Am I saying anything wrong? Am I saying anything offensive? Am I saying anything embarrassing? And I got wonderful feedback, some of which ended up in quotes in the book, like Charlie, the transgender law student, who said chromosomes are like IKEA instructions. You can either follow them or you can throw them out and do your own thing.
Yeah.
And lots of other people who... I particularly had a biomed student who I do at the beginning talk about how there's a sort of medical definition of sex, as you know, in some quarters, thankfully getting smaller, that, you know, sex can't be changed. And I had a biomed student, Cass Whitehead, who gave me really invaluable feedback on how I was framing things, the language I was using in that section, that made sure I wasn't making too many mistakes. But any mistakes were made my own.
Cool. No, that is all excellent, and that's what we need. And it's that sort of allyship where, you know, an ally, you know, is sort of guided by trans people and uses their privilege in a good way. That's exactly what we need. So that is just, like, excellent to know. there's so many things I could ask. There's one topic that you actually don't cover in the book, was one, and that's probably worth just getting out there, and that's the issue of children and and trans-related medical assistance, so to speak, or help, physical medical assistance. Tell us about perhaps what was your reasoning not for discussing that? I mean, you say in the book it's a book in itself, but let's go into more detail.
Sure. So these books in the National Interest series have very strict word limits. It cannot be more than 20,000 words. I pushed that a bit, and I think they let me publish 23,000 words on this topic. But I didn't feel I could do justice to that topic in just a few pages of a larger book. I would really, and I will be lobbying Monash University Publishing to actually do a separate book just on gender-affirming care for youth, because I am really alarmed by what happened in Queensland and by what's happening in the US, and somewhat relieved by Mark Butler, the Federal Health Minister, announcing the NHMRC inquiry into what is best practice in healthcare for trans and gender diverse people, because the NHMRC, I actually have some confidence in them making evidence-based recommendations in consulting with key stakeholders in this decision, which is exactly what the Queensland government did not do. They just made a political decision that they thought was going to be popular with the voters. And the NHMRC is not a political body. It is made up of experts. And it's going to be a slow process, but I do hope that we will, in a year or two's time, actually have really gold standard best practice for gender-affirming healthcare.
Excellent. We're just about out of time, Lashaw. I mean, there's so much we could cover in here. So the thing we do need to cover, of course, is when, where, who, how much, etc., to get the book that you've put out, Paula. And give that title once again.
Sure. Sex, Gender and Identity, Trans Rights in Australia. I have to say that after I had published the book, I decided to ask AI what was a good book title for this book, and they came up with much better titles than me, but it was too late. I'd already landed on my title. So Sex, Gender and Identity, Trans Rights in Australia, Monash University Publishing. I think if you Google it, you will come up with the link to where to buy the book from Monash University Publishing. It's a very reasonable $19.95, I believe. And if you want to get an e-book version, it's even cheaper on any of the, you know, Amazon and the like suppliers of e-books.
Yep. Note the paperback is 1995, publishing.monash.edu. I'll pop the link to that into our podcast so people can get that, along with the link to our earlier guest, Marnie Mills' show, All Happening. Paula, as I say, sadly out of time, but thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for doing the book. Thank you for your allyship. And also I have to thank you for, I'd missed some news a month ago, which I know is sort of in the ballpark next door, that the Australian Medical Association is now being far more supportive of people with variation of sex characteristics and are supporting an end to more, sort of more, in simple terms, automatic type of surgeries. So that's good news, which you passed on to me during the week. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Shelley, both for having me on the show and for all the great work that you do. I'm a big fan.
Well, thanks, Paula. You have a good Sunday afternoon in the sunshine and stay in touch. Bye now.
Thanks, Shelley. Bye.
Paula Gerber on, in those immortal words, a packed program today. I'm racingly out of time. Freedom of Species coming in next. And they have on the show today. They're in the building. They have, they're discussing strategies for tackling climate and ecological catastrophes and living as an ecologically sustainable world and how veganism fits into that. And they, their guests will be Lottie and Hayden. Well, you thought I was going to run out of time, but I'm still going to do it because I've got that obligatory pan track for Celebrate Bisexuality Month. And yeah, tongue in cheek, it's Van Halen and Panama. So let's rock our way out of here. Thanks for tuning into Out of the Pan. Thanks to Roving for messaging in. And thanks to our guests, Paula Gerber and Marnie Mills. I'm Sally Goldner. Catch you next week.
Listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.